Welcome back to another episode. I hope you've been having a great Friday and great week. Hopefully you have a great weekend. And if you like this podcast, this episode, any episode, go follow this podcast, After Dark Coast Ghost Killers, anywhere you've been listening to your podcast, Spotify, Apple, wherever. You can play it anywhere around the world. If you want to stay updated, because I do like to at least update it, the Facebook page once or twice a week, you can check that out. Definitely, if you don't have the notifications when our episodes come out, because I'll post all that stuff on Facebook as well. So our Facebook page is After Dark Coast to Coast Killers. What's good? After Dark Coast to Coast Killers. You can follow us anywhere. We don't have Instagram, Twitter, or anything like that yet. But without further ado, like I said, I hope you are having a great Friday and a great week. Hopefully it continues going good. This episode is going to have a viewer's discretion is advised, is what I meant to say. This episode is kind of going to be a little bit dark. It's going to be a little bit sad. There's not enough information just to throw this out here. So if this is going to be like a 15-minute episode, it's going to be a 15-minute episode. I'm not going to try to purposely extend it. I am going to, though, try to find as much information as I can as we go along. Because right now there is no suspects. I'll theorize a suspect, but I can't name any names because there is no known suspect that I know of, or that anyone knows of. I should just throw that out there too. So this is going to probably be a shorter episode, but without further ado, let's get into this. We are going to go into Toronto, Canada, and investigate a strand of baby deaths that has happened between July 1980 and March 1981. These homicides is what they are to be believed, not natural causes, but actually somebody murdering these babies, has occurred in the cardiac ward of the hospital for sick children between July 1980 and March 1981. They ended when the police were called in, and the digitalitis type medication, which was digoxin, was used for the killings, and then they locked it up, and the only way that you could get to it was unlocking it. And the theory, like I said, they haven't even investigated anyone. I don't think they may have at least had a couple suspects, but right now it's not named in the article. But I'm guaranteeing it's probably a nurse. Typically, these type of hospital killings aren't random patients. They aren't, a patient's family. They aren't, anybody besides a nurse. We've seen that with the Angel of Death killings, both in the UK and the United States. We see that with a lot of other serial killings that take place in hospitals and in clinics. It's typically a nurse. And the reason that I do think it has stopped when the police did have a lock and key type of situation is because not everyone had the key. If they had to get the key, they would have to probably had permission and this login sheet who had the key and who didn't. And that's probably why it did stop. This person that was killing these babies realized this was serious. This is where I can get caught. I gotta stop. And I am not necessarily saying that this person had a happiness or enjoyment to kill these babies. It doesn't seem like that right now. It doesn't seem like whoever did kill these babies just didn't care for the life of them, or didn't do it irrationally, or like any other serial killing, impulsively. They didn't really have a motive, I guess. Let us continue. Three nurses were at the center of the investigation and an apparent attempt to poison nurses' food. One of the nurses, Susan Nails, was charged with four murders, but the prosecution was dismissed a year later on the grounds that she could not have been responsible for a death not included in the document, which the judge deemed a murder. A conspiracy between multiple nurses was regarded by a judge as not credible. The lead detective did resign. An official government inquiry discounted claims by the hospital's own former chief of pediatrics that the deaths were not homicides and not to be proven due to the medicine. A second suspect was not prosecuted. The case is officially one of unsolved murders. To get more into the deaths of these babies, the cardiac ward of the hospital for sick children began what was subsequently found to be a several-fold increase in mortality on June 30th, 1980. Within 2 months, 20 patient deaths led to a group of nurses approaching the unit's cardiologist, but they kept investigation limited and in-house to prevent a moral problem. The excess deaths continued, but it was not until March 1981 that a bereaved father's extreme distress led to the coroner being brought in and detecting suspiciously high levels of a heart-regulating medication, digoxin, a powerful form of digitalitis in the dead baby. 8 days later, he was told that autopsy by the hospital had already found 13 times the normal concentration of the same heart drug in another dead body. So imagine a baby, them being so little, they have to have a little dosage of it. The dosage was 13 times as they had found an autopsy. Imagine you having a drug, whether it's Oxy, whether it's Prozac, whether it's ibuprofen, but you do that 13 times more than the original dosage. You wouldn't survive that. Neither did these babies. The medication had not been subject to any security measures as why these babies did die and why it was the same drug. They weren't being observant of probably any medication, but specifically and more likely just this drug. Whether or not that should have been right, I don't know. But they didn't have any reasonable excuse until now to lock it up. The police did come when they were called in and began to search staff lockers when another baby had died on March 22nd of 1981. Examination of work logs and other nurses' subjective impression that a colleague had inappropriate reactions to the death led to the arrest and charging with the murder of a nurse who was released on bail. In January 1982, these babies became ill in a separate department. It was later found that epinephrine, which was not supposed to be on the ward, had somehow been substituted for vitamin E. There had been not fatal unauthorized digoxin administration to other babies, and another death was contrary to what the hospital said at the time, caused by unauthorized administration of medicine. In September of 1981, a team leader, nurse Phyllis Trainer, who died in 2011, found heart drug capsules in food she was eating, and another nurse found the capsules in her soup. Kind of leads, if you actually realize it, take it more than this grain of salt that I'm reading to you. This is like a height type of thing. Imagine you're there and all of this is going down, whether you're a patient, a family member of a patient, or in this case a nurse. Now you have all these things happening when the police are there, and even without the police being there, you have babies dying, you have other nurses or, you know, cooks, I should say, I don't really know what they're called, but all these other people trying to get rid of nurses now. Not just babies, but it's nurses, and it's different drug, and it's poisoning. Police are now trying to figure out what's going on. It kind of does seem like a diversion. You know, the police are there. You got to do something to create a scene. Away from the babies. Susan Nils, which was somebody that worked there once again, was arrested and charged with murder, but a judge acquitted her at the preliminary hearing stage, and the case never went to trial, partially because she had not been on duty when one death had occurred. And more than one nurse had been involved in a series of motiveless murders strained credulity. The nurse did not believe that there had been any murders, regardless, and in a 2011 interview, she reiterated that the 1985 inquiry reported had been incorrect in stating that many deaths were rising in mortality on the ward, from 1 a week to 5 a week. And I'm not going to talk about this in detail. I've talked about a lot in previous episodes. This seems like it's an impossible thing. Yes, whoever did this is technically named as a serial killer. Whether or not they just hated babies, I don't know. But in short, whenever we see a drastic rise, like in this case, one baby death to five baby deaths a week, the person who is murdering is scared. They're frightened. Their anticipation of getting caught is rising. So they become impulsive and they have to kill as many babies as possible. And in this case, if a suspect was to be caught and actually charged, which I don't know if it's possible today, but if they were, or if even during that time they screwed up, it would be because of this reason. They got scared and they became impulsive with their killings. Data from the investigation was sent to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which discovered that Trainor was the only person who had been on duty for all 29 cases of death being looked at. In 1984, two nurses testified that they had seen Trainor making a March 24th, 1981 unauthorized injection into the IV of a baby who died 3 hours later. The commission of inquiry listed 8 of the baby's deaths as murder, with another 13 as highly suspicious. Later reports mentioned a total of 32 babies and 3 children. Trainor did deny any impropriety of the behavior that she was accused of displaying on the ward, and was even questioned again in televised inquiries, and resigned after the inquiries reported published, although chemical interaction between dexoxygen and rubber tubing used in its administration was used to question whether the deaths were the result of foul play, and the case is officially as listed as unsolved murders. Sorry for all the vibrations. That was my phone. But anyhow, It just seems irrational, and it seems more of a person hating babies. And like I said, whoever did poison or attempted to poison two nurses could be the culprit. That's because it seems like a diversion. You have a diversion straying away while police is there. It's like inserting yourself in an investigation. You're trying to sway that investigation that you're involved in away from you or away from any possible other victims. In this case, it does seem more of a diversion because nurses are trying to poison, and I'm just going to throw this out here. It doesn't seem that when the police were there, there was no poisoning. There was just baby deaths with the medicine. But no nurses were being poisoned till the police did come. And when the police did arrive, everything started going more and more with the baby deaths. Anyhow, like I said, I don't have much on this episode, but it is what it is, because some of these podcast episodes are short for this reason. Because there's really no known suspect, there's nobody charged, there's nobody still serving life in prison. There's none of that. Anyhow, like I said, if you like this episode and you haven't checked out our other episodes, go do so. If you haven't even followed this podcast, go follow this podcast right now. Any support would help. You can listen to us anywhere, anytime, any platform pretty much. Outcast, Anchor, Spotify, Apple, whatever you listen to this podcast on. Go follow us right now. Show us the support. Show us that you are actually listening. And without further ado, let's look quickly. A lot of people are talking about Susan Nils and how she was falsely accused. Let's see if this article is actually related. I don't think it is, but we're going to go check once it is loading. I don't know if this is related to these murders. Oh, come on. Well, my Wi-Fi is being so... No, it's not connected, but there was a doctor charged in a different series of murders in Toronto this year. There's nothing. There's really no true suspect. There's nothing new. But without further ado, stay tuned for our next week's episode as we jump into and actually hopefully have more episode about the Wednesday killer. See you next time.